truth with a Bible in one hand
and an American flag in the other.
University Broadcast Studio. It's Todd Starnes.
Yeah, well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes radio program. Just honored to have you with us. Welcome wherever you might be listening, from border to border, coast to coast, across the fruited plain. We especially want to welcome our listeners in Memphis, Tennessee, our brand new affiliate, KWAM, and we would love to hear from all of you folks today, but especially you folks in the Mid-South, and we have some lovely prizes to share with you, lovely gifts to say welcome to the radio broadcasting family. 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. ToddStarnes.com is our website. And folks, I've got to tell you, when you look at the people that President Trump has brought onto his team there at the White House, I can't think of a finer attorney general than Bill Barr. This guy is a bulldog. He is tough as nails, and he doesn't take anything from anybody. And he's not afraid to jump in and do what needs to be done, even if it triggers the mainstream media and the Democrat Party. So on the Newsmaker line to talk about some of the latest developments surrounding the case involving Roger Stone, the Attorney General's looming testimony up on Capitol Hill, our good friend from Fox News Channel, Greg Jarrett, has a brand new book out called Witch Hunt, the story of the greatest mass delusion in American political history. It is the must-read book of the year, ladies and gentlemen. Greg, always good to have you with us.
Hey, Todd, great talking to you.
Hey, look, let's first of all, I want to get your reaction to this news that broke yesterday concerning the jury that convicted Roger Stone. Turns out several of those folks were rabid never Trumpers.
Well, and especially, Todd, the foreman of the jury, who apparently, even on the day of the decision to convict Roger Stone, was, you know, tweeting stuff out. And apparently the defense has discovered she has a long history of anti-Trump remarks and sentiments and tweets. And this is a person who, by virtue of that, should never have been on the jury, much less the foreperson. And so, you know, I think the judge has to declare a mistrial and grant a new trial because of juror misconduct. I mean, this is a person who, you know, these juror questionnaires, and I used to write them up for the individual trials that I had, you know, they're very extensive. They ask a lot of questions about politics and your political views when it's a case like this. And I can't imagine that she was forthcoming. We'll wait and see. But, you know, I think Roger Stone deserves a new trial.
Interestingly enough, so does Judge Andrew Napolitano, not exactly a fan of the president on some of these some of the issues of the day. But even he says, hey, look, this is a big problem. The attorney general, it's really fascinating to see how he handles these kinds of issues compared to Jeff Sessions, who was at least gave the impression of being timid and not wanting to jump into any of this.
You know, Bill Barr cares about the rule of law and nothing else, doesn't give a whit about politics. He's not that kind of guy. And, you know, he has a long record of this. First, when he was attorney general decades ago. And so it is so stupid for stupid people like Elizabeth Warren, Chuck Schumer, and, you know, the ever-lying Adam Schiff to be saying things like, oh, this is an abuse of power. Warren said that, you know, the attorney general should be impeached. I mean, good Lord, this mass hysteria, everything President Trump says or does, if he tweets something, it's somehow magically criminal or an abuse of power or an impeachable offense. I mean, the insanity in Washington is now off the charts.
And, of course, now we have the attorney general accepting an invitation to testify. What is that? March 31st, House Judiciary. What do you think we're going to see happen there?
In a battle of wits with Jerry Nadler, I will take Bill Barr any day of the week. You know, Nadler is one of the most dim-witted members of Congress, always has been. And so, you know, Bill Barr is going to get up there and he's going to say, the president did not tell me what to do. I had no conversation with the president about this. We at Main Justice took a look at what these prosecutors were recommending and determined very quickly that it was ludicrous and excessive. You know, for lying to Congress and obstruction, these are things that, you know, you should never do, but if convicted, it merits a couple of years behind bars, not up to 9 years behind bars. But these, you know, prosecutors are so politically invested in the Russia hoax, you know, that Roger Stone was their last gasp.
Greg, I want to ask you about the looming cloud over all of this, and that, of course, is the Durham investigation. Are you getting any inkling of when we might be able to, that investigation is actually going to be wrapped up and we'll find out the findings?
Well, I think it's going to be sometime later this year. You know, Durham has a record of going very quickly because he is focused. He has put together a terrific team of investigators. They've been going full steam ahead. You know, they make the FBI look like they're on a slow walk. I mean, the FBI, especially under Comey, you know, takes forever to conduct an investigation because they're not smart people under Comey. But here you've got a lot of smart people under Durham. And so I would think probably mid-year we'll get a sense of where he's going, whether there will be any potential prosecutions. And, you know, we do have criminal referrals still outstanding against Andrew McCabe for lying, against Kevin Kleinsmith for doctoring emails to lie to the FISA court to gain a warrant to spy on Carter Page. So I would expect that there could be other people who are at criminal risk with charges.
And honestly, I think at least the Trump supporters, and there are a lot of them, Greg, are wanting to see justice served here. They don't want this swept under the rug. They want these people brought to justice.
Well, and it's understandable. I mean, look at the long list of people who, you know, got away with violations of law. At the top of the list is Hillary Clinton, who committed, as I write in my books, 110 different felony offenses. She should have been charged. She was protected by Obama and Loretta Lynch and James Comey and others at the FBI. But then you go down the list of people who signed off on all of the FISA warrants. They lied to the judges. They deceived the court. They committed fraud on the court. And we already have in a recent court filing the Department of Justice admitting that at least two of the FISA warrants were illegally obtained. So the people who signed off on that, they should be criminally prosecuted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Greg, we're going to have to leave it there. Look, we appreciate your great insight, as always. And book doing well?
Yeah, book's doing great. But, you know, I hope people, you know, read it. And I think they'll be shocked at what they learn about the level of corruption in the Obama administration at the FBI and the Department of Justice.
And that's what it's all about, folks. It goes all the way back to the Obama administration. And Greg does a terrific job of laying all of this out for us in this book, Witch Hunt, a story of the greatest mass delusion in American political history. Greg, as always, thank you.
Todd, my pleasure. Take care.
All right. Good guy right there, folks. Great journalist, too. I'm telling you, it's at the when it's all said and done, do not be surprised if this goes directly to the feet of Barack Hussein Obama. I sincerely believe that he's the one who signed off, who gave the final okay for them to try and sabotage Donald Trump's campaign and then ultimately to set into motion the attack, the deep state attack to try and take down his presidency. It really is a deep state coup. And by the way, not only did it fail, it failed politically for the Democrats. Rasmussen has a brand new poll out. 55% of voters say impeachment actually made the president stronger politically. Only 16% of Americans say that he was weakened. 16%. Democrats got to be shaking in their boots right now. And that's why, and yes, someone asked me this, Todd, are they really that stupid? Do you think they're really going to try to impeach the president again? Oh, absolutely. I absolutely do believe they're that stupid. All right, got to take a break here, folks. 844-747-8868. It is a toll-free number. That's 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Stearns Show.
It's the Todd Stearns Radio Show.
Welcome back to the Todd Stearns radio program. Great to have you with us today. I hope it's a nice day where you are. A little gloomy here in New York City where we broadcast our program from. Hey, Young America's Foundation, we had a terrific time meeting so many great conservative students from across the country in Nashville, Tennessee last weekend. And I got an email last night from our good friend Spencer Brown, who's going to be with us in just a little while. But there's a crazy story developing out of the University of Virginia. And there are a couple of phrases that you need to be aware of. Multicultural and POC, which means a person of color. That's the abbreviation there, POC, person of color. They apparently just opened some sort of a new multicultural student center there at the University of Virginia. And apparently a lot of white students, Caucasian, pale face, crackers, if you will, apparently came into the space, not knowing that when it comes to multiculturalism, white is not included in that demographic. So the voice you're going to hear, and we have the video, which you really do need to see on toddstearns.com, but we actually have on our website the video, but I want you to listen to what happened at the University of Virginia.
Public service announcement. Excuse me, if y'all didn't know, this is the MSC, and frankly, there's just too many white people in here, and this is a space for people of color. So just be really cognizant of the space that you're taking up, because it does make some of us POCs uncomfortable when we see too many white people in here. It's only been open for 4 days, and frankly, there's the whole university for a lot of y'all to be at, and there's very few spaces for us. So keep that in mind. Thank you.
So there you have it. Apparently, white people are not allowed in that particular area of the University of Virginia. What did she say? She said some people get nervous around white people. Is that what she said? Can we play this again, Caleb? I just want to make sure we heard what we thought we heard.
Public service announcement. Excuse me. If y'all didn't know, this is the MSC, and frankly, there's just too many white people in here, and this is a space for people of color. So just be really cognizant of the space that you're taking up, because it does make some of us POCs uncomfortable when we see too many white people in here. It's only been open for 4 days, and frankly, there's the whole university for a lot of y'all to be at, and there's very few spaces for us. So keep that in mind. Thank you.
Yes, just keep that in mind, please. Excuse me, white person, you can't be drinking from that water fountain. Excuse me.
Sail on aisle 4.
Excuse me. Hello. What an annoying voice. Hello. Oh, you white people, you can't. No, you have to go to the back of the bus. Those seats are not for you.
Public service announcement.
Excuse me. Excuse me. All you white people, you can't be sitting down here. You got to sit on the balcony. Excuse me.
Public service announcement.
You know, I hate to say it. As laughable as that statement is, that young lady, the racism spewing out of that young lady's mouth. I do not know who she is. I do not know her heart. I do not know if she is a racist, but she was saying racist things. Now, you and all you need to know to figure this out, just replace the word white with any other skin color, any other pigmentation. Doesn't matter, even if it's purple. It doesn't matter. Just go ahead and insert that and then say what she said. Let's one more time. I want to play this one more time.
Public service announcement. Excuse me. If y'all didn't know, this is the MSC, and frankly, there's just too many white people in here, and this is a space for people of color. So just be really cognizant of the space that you're taking up, because it does make some of us POCs uncomfortable when we see too many white people in here. It's only been open for 4 days, and frankly, there's the whole university for a lot of y'all to be at, and there's very few spaces for us. So keep that in mind.
What does that even mean? So that implies that there are places at the University of Virginia where people of color are not welcome. I find that very hard to believe. Do you find that hard to believe, Caleb? I find this very hard to believe.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that.
I suspect we would have heard a news story about that. You know, but black people cannot use the library. You're Asian. Oh, yeah, you can't come into the cafeteria. I'm just going to go out on a limb here, and I suspect that when it's all said and done, something like that would have been national news, don't you? I think so, too.
Public service announcement.
Unbelievable. We're going to talk to Spencer Brown about that. But, folks, racism is alive and well on university campuses. And sadly, in many instances, that kind of racism is actually condoned by administration. That is unacceptable. And going back to what Martin Luther King Jr. said so eloquently, that we're supposed to judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin, right? Isn't that what we were, isn't that what this was supposed to be about? Wasn't that what the movement was supposed to be about? So now all of a sudden we're going to turn around and we're going to judge white people because of the color of their skin? Is that where we are as a society right now? That does not, to me, sound like we have evolved that much. It sounds like we've digressed. I mean, this is absolutely insane that this kind of mentality exists. But this is a learned behavior, and the kids are learning this in their schools. And that's why, as moms and dads, you've got to be on top of this stuff. Shame on this young lady. She has been greatly deceived, and she has been led astray somewhere in the educational process.
Excuse me.
I mean, UVA is a very prestigious school. So, I mean, you've got to be smart to get into the school. So this young lady should know better. And I thank goodness that somebody was able to capture this on video, and they were able to expose this nonsense. But I feel bad for kids these days, especially white kids, because they're being taught right now in public schools, there's something wrong with you. You have privilege. You didn't earn that. You got something simply because of the color of your skin. That is offensive. That is racist. And we got to knock it off, folks. Got to knock it off. Unbelievable, these people. 844-747-8868. Toll-free number here, folks. 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Starnes Show. Excited to see an op-ed written by Don Trump Jr. reminding everybody of what really happened last weekend in that parking lot of the Walmart in Jacksonville, Florida, where a Trump-hating thug rammed his van, tried to run over Republicans who were volunteering at a voter registration tent. And we know this for a fact because we have the police report for you to see at toddstarnes.com. And this has gotten zero national media attention. And to my knowledge, and if I'm mistaken, I will. You let me know and I'll correct it. To my knowledge, not a single Democrat running for the White House has either condemned what happened or has renounced what happened or has been asked to renounce by the mainstream media. And that's appalling, because I can tell you, if this had been a Republican, it would have been all over the news, and they would have demanded that every Republican running for office nationwide renounce this guy. I'm going to go right to the newsmaker line. Our good friend from the Trump 2020 presidential campaign, Mark Lotter, joins us. Mark, great to have you on the show today.
It's good to be back, Todd.
You know, this really angers me, Mark, because there is such a double standard of the mainstream media. Go back to when Maxine Waters said, you get in the faces of the Trump supporters, you absolutely harass them, even if it's in a shopping center. And this took place in a shopping center parking lot. And yet she bears, you know, they're saying that she bears no responsibility for this.
No, it shouldn't be shocking, because every time something happens, they immediately run out and blame Donald Trump for it. I've even seen where Mike Bloomberg is now trying to blame Donald Trump for his abhorrent comments on stop and frisk that he's now trying to distance himself from. I mean, everything they do is okay because they can blame the president, but when their people do things wrong, no one asks them the question, no one makes them distance themselves from it, and it's almost like it doesn't happen.
And I'm glad that Don Jr. is calling him out on this, because there is a double standard here.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you had that horrible attack that you just talked about. I mean, think about what they did with Sarah Sanders when she was kicked out of a restaurant trying to have dinner with her friends and her family. I mean, this is something, and Maxine Waters champions it. You have, members of the squad that were running around, you know, screaming profanities at the tops of their lungs. I mean, this is something they've been doing for a while now in this resistance movement, and yet they're not going to be held to account.
Mark, I want to talk about how things are looking out there on the campaign trail. I'm just really pleasantly surprised by this Rasmussen poll. 55% of voters say the impeachment actually made President Trump stronger politically. Only 16% say it weakened him. I mean, the Democrats must be pulling their hair out over this.
Well, they should be, and to be honest with you, while I'm glad to see that number, I'm sad that they had to learn it the hard way and put the American people through this, because they just defied the hopes, the wishes, and the fears of our founders in doing this partisan impeachment. And there's not a single person in this campaign office where I'm sitting right now that would not have rather had a campaign based strictly on the issues and the president's success and the views for the future. But since Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff, the squad, Thelma and Louise, all decided to go off and jump off that cliff, well, now they're having to to reap what they sowed.
And meanwhile, you have the campaign out there, and you guys are really making some inroads into demographics, into communities that have not been Republican strongholds. There was a terrific piece in a website called YallPolitics.com. It covers Southern politics. And they were actually commending you guys for reaching out to Black voters in places like Mississippi.
Absolutely. I mean, look, this is a president who went into a Black church in 2016 and said, what do you have to lose? And while it's easy to say the words, then he went and backed it up with the policies and the success. And it's not just about the historically low unemployment rate for Black Americans, but you also see paychecks rising. And because we have the first time in history, we have more available jobs than we do unemployed people. There was even a story about, I read about it this morning, about how companies are now expanding their labor pool. They're going in, hiring people they didn't traditionally hire, and training them so they can succeed, which is also offering new opportunities for communities who have been faced discrimination, faced hurdles trying to break into this economy in years ago. And that's why when I travel the country and I go all over the place now for the president and this campaign, I have a number of people, whether they be Black Americans, Latino and Hispanic Americans, labor union members, people who have been traditionally Democrat voting blocks, are now telling me, they always look the other way to make sure that no one's listening, they always say the same thing. I can't put on a red MAGA hat, but I can go in there and vote to reelect the president because me and my friends and my family were doing good.
I know that you guys are focused here, laser focused on what's happening next in South Carolina and Nevada. But what do you make of these numbers that you guys are seeing? The highest number of votes for an incumbent president in modern history in New Hampshire for this president. You guys are raking in. I mean, the fundraising numbers are off the charts. What is that telling you guys?
Well, I tell you that everything is setting up. It's setting up the way it needs to be, but we can't get complacent. And, you know, the fact that we could have the highest number, as you said, double the amount of votes that Barack Obama had, double George W. Bush, and nearly double Ronald Reagan in 1984, that is, you know, historic and absolutely well-deserved for the president. But I can tell you, as someone who just recently talked to him, he's not going to let anyone rest on their laurels. He wants us to continue to go out there and keep fighting and act like we're down, because we're going to go every community, every state, and we're going to fight. And we think now, especially since you've got a socialist capitalist leading the Democrat Party, that we can put every state in play.
And that's an important thing for people to understand here, Mark. We're not taught. There are no moderate Democrats running for the White House right now. Not a single one.
None. Zero. There is no such thing as a moderate lane. They have all talked about trillions of dollars in tax increases. They've all raised their hand and said that illegal immigrants deserve free government-funded tax health care. And they've even, all endorsed no limits on abortion, abortion up to the first breath. I mean, that's what Pete Buttigieg, the supposed moderate, believes a baby should be able to be killed up until it takes its first breath. I mean, that's just so out of touch with the vast majority, the overwhelming majority of America.
And what was it Bernie Sanders said? He said there's no place in the Democrat Party for pro-lifers. So, okay, come on over to the Republican side.
Welcome. You're welcome in the Republican Party.
Well said. All right, Mark, we're going to have to leave it there. Hey, good luck out there on the campaign trail.
Thanks, Todd.
Mark Lauder, ladies and gentlemen, from the Trump 2020 campaign. And I'm telling you, Pete Buttigieg, Bernie Sanders, no difference. One's got the, one's old guy, the other's not. He's trying to be cool, though. Hip, Pete Buttigieg is. By the way, Rush Limbaugh, El Rushmo, getting a little hot water because of some things he said about Buttigieg. But I read Talking Points Memo has the story here. I see nothing wrong with what Rush Limbaugh said about Buttigieg. It is true that Buttigieg is, well, it's true. Buttigieg is married and he's been kissing his husband on the debate stage a lot. And I mean, he's not making a statement here. This is a matter of fact. And when you listen to what Jim Clyburn said, the black congressman out of South Carolina, this is off-putting for black voters in South Carolina. That is a campaign issue. This is not something Todd Starnes is making up. We played this audio for you to hear earlier in, I think it was about last week we played this audio, and tried to explain why Buttigieg is having a very difficult time reaching out and getting black support. And you're going to have black support if you're going to be the Democrat nominee. It's a big mess. And I mean, the things Mike Bloomberg said, some of those things, throwing people up against the walls. Look, I'm all for stop and frisk, but he went way beyond stop and frisk in those comments that we played earlier this week. And I think the audio is actually on ToddStearns.com. So you can check that out there. All right, we've got to take a break here and pay some bills. Valentine's Day is coming up. What are you doing for Valentine's Day? Anything special? Anything special for Valentine's Day? Do you have something like an event planned? Are you cooking dinner for the wife? Ladies, do you have something special planned for your husband? We would love to hear your ideas and your thoughts. Because, you know, a lot of guys, I'm not saying every guy, but, you know, a lot of us guys, we forget. And so normally the Valentine's Day gift is something you pick up down at the, the Kroger. You know, some flowers and maybe some, some of the delicious candies. I'm a big fan of Ghirardelli myself. But what are you doing for Valentine's Day? 844-747-8868. It's a toll-free number. It's 844-747-8868. The website, ToddStearns.com. We'll be right back.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
I was reading this piece in the College Fix. Christian Schneider is a reporter over there. And the reporter, I don't know if Christian is a guy or a gal, so we'll just say the reporter. So the reporter is a little perplexed here at the school district there in Madison, Wisconsin. So back when I was in school, and Caleb, I don't know what it was like in, you know, when you were in grade school, but back in the dark ages, which would have been the 1970s, we used to have grades. If you did a good job, you got an A. If you did a really good job, you got an A plus. And if you were, you know, just average, well, they would give you a C. And if you, you know, were stupid, you would get an F. You know, that was kind of, you know, you had the B's and the D's and you A, B, C, D, and F.
Yeah, and I always wondered what happened to E, by the way.
I don't know. It's always left out. It's, you know, it doesn't get its due in the grading scale. So anyway, Christian Snyder over at the College Fix is upset because her child's daughter came home, second grade daughter came home, got the report card, and instead of A, B, C, D, or F, they replaced the grades with something else. So instead of giving a child an A, they received an X, E-X, and that stood for exceeding. So if your kid was smart, your kid got an exceeding grade, and that stands for student consistently exceeds grade level expectations for the end of the year. Instead of a B, you got an M for meeting. Student consistently meets grade level expectations. I guess that would also be a C as well, because they only have like A, B, C. They only have four different grading levels now. So you have exceeding, you have meeting, and then you have developing, which means student is developing, understanding, and is approaching grade. So in other words, they've got work to do. They're probably like a D level student.
Which, by the way, is a D, and it still starts with a D. So that one kind of failed to accomplish the whole changing it up thing.
Oh, no, because it's labeled DV.
Oh, okay.
Which still makes no sense.
Like the tapes?
I don't know. That's DVD. DVD, that's...
No, I mean like the little DV cassettes, like the...
I don't know. Then there's, instead of F, they use the term E. So there's your E, Caleb. They've got E back, and E is not good. If you're an E student, that means you're terrible. E stands for emerging. Emerging. Student begins to show initial understanding of grade level expectations. I don't know about this. I mean, moms, dads, I know this is like a big issue around the country where a lot of school districts are getting rid of the grades, you know, the letter grades, because they say it's emotionally troubling for students when they have a big fat F, you know, written on their test papers.
I actually feel like when I was in school, what was more common that I got were just numbers, not letters. Like you would get a 75 and then you get, okay, well, that's a C. But they didn't write C on the paper, just wrote the number grade.
I mean, it's one thing. I mean, if you're failing the class and, you know, you get the F and then the teacher writes, you know, you're stupid or, you know, moron or, you know, something of that nature. I mean, that would be inappropriate, I would think.
The dunce hat.
Or the dunce. Oh, yes. You had to sit in the corner. Oh, yes. With the hat on your head. It seems to me that would want to motivate you to do a better job. Right. So this makes it look like they're trying not to hurt the feelings of the children. And sometimes kids are going to have their feelings hurt. So I'm curious, ladies and gentlemen, how you feel about this? Did you feel inferior? Were you morally, I don't know, rejected because you got a D or an F? Or do you support this new movement to erase the grading system and go with something that's a little bit I don't know what the word I'm looking for here, but it's a little bit more soothing? 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868.
So a failing grade is an E, and an A, what is essentially an A, is an EX. I imagine that students who get an A are petrified when they first open up and see the letter E there before they see the letter X. Or like imagine the teacher writing the X very smallly or like somehow getting the circle overlap. But wait, did I get an E? Oh, no, it's an EX. No, I'm good.
It just seems to me, though, that they're sugarcoating. You know what I mean? It's sugarcoating. I mean, just if your kid is failing, if your kid is not doing the work, maybe your kid refuses to do the work, is not doing the homework, and the kid gets an F, that tells you as a mom and dad, oh, wait a second, we've got to handle Junior here.
I've actually got a really funny story about a very young cousin of mine, because, you know, in kindergarten, they'll give you the S for satisfactory, U for unsatisfactory, and like the letters in between. And he was into kindergarten, and we were asking him what the letters meant, and he was making up things, but he basically got the gist, like, okay, S is really good, U is really bad, and but he didn't exactly know what the letters stood for, but he was making up stuff. We were like, what does the U stand for? He goes, you are terrible.
Oh, Christian's a dude. My apologies. I got it wrong. So Christian Schneider goes on to write, this is a great piece here at the College Fix. He says, a friend of mine noted that her school had recently moved to a number system where a 4 was the best and 1 was the worst, but a 3 meant your kid is doing fine, whether the kid had A's or C's. That's very confusing for the parent, right? I mean, if you're a parent, you're busy. You got stuff to do. You got to mow the grass. You got to, you know, take out the garbage. You got to cook the dinner. You don't have time to sit down and go through all this. A, B, C, D, F. It's very simple. And Mr. Schneider says, sure, if your child is receiving a lot of grades of emerging, it might be time for you to worry. But the sugar-coated classifications only feed the idea that every child is equally brilliant and they simply develop at different speeds. Really, do you think that is every child brilliant? I mean, I think there are some pretty brilliant people that are much smarter than I am, and I don't feel triggered by that. I don't feel emotionally stunted. I mean, that's just the way it is, right? I mean, I hate to say it, but in spite of your best intentions, sometimes your kid's going to be a moron. That's just the way it goes. It's nothing against you, mom and dad. That's the way it is. I mean, life and history is littered with morons and stupid people. No, I'm not saying your child is stupid. I'm just saying, what's wrong with letter grades? I don't understand that. 844-747-8868. You know what it is? Everybody's a winner. Don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. 844-747-8868. ToddStarns.com is the website. We'll be right back.